the Nightingale. Long ago, in the far distant past, the great land of China was ruled by an emperor who was most powerful. He lived in a magnificent palace made of glass and fine porcelain, so delicate that his soldiers and servants had to be very careful they didn't break anything when they walked about. Also in the palace were many beautiful art treasures because the emperor was very rich indeed. He was so rich that sometimes he didn't know what to spend his money on. The palace was surrounded by beautiful gardens filled with sweet-smelling flowers. There were water fountains operated by slaves whose only job was to stand there working the pumps. Also, there were many streams running through the gardens, and the emperor had to arrange for them to be many-colored. His gardeners put small quantities of dye in the streams. They left the lake clear, but they filled it with hundreds of... wonderful palace and gardens, some from overseas, for the fame of the emperor's beautiful creation had spread all over the world. He happened one day to be reading a book in which a writer had told of his visit to China. The palace was mentioned and the gardens, but then the writer had written, "I shall never forget listening to the sound of the nightingale." The emperor sent for his high chamberlain. "What's this?" he asked of him. "The nightingale? We do not have any nightingales, do we?" The High Chamberlain replied, "We do not, sire, for the simple reason that the nightingale is a very plain-looking bird." "I see," said the emperor. "And where might I see one of these birds?" And so the emperor was taken to where the nightingales lived, in a wood by a vast lake, far away from the palace. The emperor liked the song of the nightingale, but not the look of the bird. It was a very plain-looking thing. "Just an ordinary brown bird. Can we do something about that?" said the emperor. So the High Chamberlain arranged for some nightingales to be caught and put into cages. Of course, they refused to sing. Then the High Chamberlain arranged for them to be coloured and bedecked in jewels, but it made not a scrap of difference. The nightingales were silent in their cages. The emperor was not pleased, and he ordered all the nightingales to be released. Then he invited some of his cleverest craftsmen to make working models of birds, brightly coloured and with elegant shapes. Inside each was a clockwork motor, which could be wound up with a key. Then from the golden beak of the imitation bird came the sound of the nightingale. But even now the result was not pleasing, for each bird had only one song. The nightingale, living wild in the woods, had many songs, hardly repeating himself at all, and travellers still talked of the wonderful singing they'd heard in China. It was about this time that the emperor fell ill. Even the best doctors in the world could not say what was the matter with him. He hardly ate any food, and on most days he stayed in his bed. Even when he got out of bed and sat in the garden, he refused to see any visitors. He refused to sign any papers or make any new laws, and the country began to suffer with him. "Something must be done," said the High Chamberlain, "or the country will go to ruin, and all of us with it." Secretly, he arranged for a certain tree to be removed from the forest and planted outside the emperor's bedroom window. It was a tree that the nightingales happened to like. Also, we have made for him.
as good as the other, but still good enough to please him. He took up his axe and began to chop at the tree. After a while, he felt tired and decided to have a rest. His good wife had provided him with some bread and cheese and beer, so he settled down to enjoy his lunch. When that was done, he stretched himself down on the ground and began to think about the three wishes. "This is good fortune indeed," he said to himself. "Three wishes. Now, let me see. What do I really want? Not one wish should be wasted. I must take time to think of the best way to use the wishes." An owl fluttered his wings, and Ralph saw he was sitting on a branch looking very sleepy. "Owls are supposed to have wisdom," thought Ralph. "I'll ask him what is best for me to do." But when he did, the owl shook his head. "It's daytime," he said to Ralph. "I sleep during the day and hunt at night. Ask me later." But Ralph couldn't wait for nightfall. He thought to himself that perhaps one good thing to wish for was a bigger cottage. Surely the one they had was becoming too small now that there were three children in the family. "Oh, I wish that stew was in front of me right now, and the dumplings in it." Almost before the words were spoken, the stew was there and the dumplings were in it. Ralph's wife came hurrying in from the kitchen. "What's happened?" she said in alarm. "The stew and the dumplings vanished before my very eyes." So Ralph told her about the elf and the oak tree and the three wishes. She was furious with him. "You idiot," she shouted. "Now you've wasted one of the wishes on a silly plate of stew and dumplings. I wish you had dumplings on the end of your nose." And there, to both their amazement, sat Ralph with two dumplings on the end of his nose. He looked so funny that his wife couldn't help laughing. But then they had to use the third wish to get the dumplings off his nose. "Oh, never mind," said Ralph's wife. "We've had a good laugh, and that's worth a lot. So don't worry. We've got a nice home and three lovely kids. So I think we should all eat now. Don't you?"
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. In days gone by, a king and queen had a beautiful daughter. As her skin was so pure and her hair so fair, they called her Snow White. She was a very happy little girl, and her parents loved her dearly, but they had one fear. When she was born, a magician had prophesied that the color of gold would harm her, and that a black prince would carry her away to a far-off land. Because of this, the king forbade anyone to wear gold in the palace, and all golden ornaments were removed. Snow White grew up without seeing any gold, and she came to no harm. But her mother, the queen, died, and within a year the king had married again. His new wife was a witch in disguise. She had cast a spell that made her look as beautiful as a queen should be, but in her heart she was still a witch. However, the king did not know this, as he was under her spell. His new queen had a magic mirror hidden in her room. She allowed no one but herself ever to look into the mirror, which had a golden frame. When she was alone, she would look into the mirror and say, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" The mirror always replied, "In all this world, on land and sea, there is none fairer queen than thee." She was so vain, almost every day she just had to hear the mirror telling her she was beautiful. But one day it happened that Snow White walked by the mirror in the queen's room, and although she didn't see it, her reflection appeared in the mirror for a second. Later, the queen asked the mirror the same old question, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" "You are fair, as all can see," the mirror replied, "but there is one more fair than thee." The queen was furious, and she knew it must be Snow White, so she paid two villains to waylay her when she was out riding on her horse. The two villains took her money and made their plan. Snow White was caught by them, but they hadn't the heart to kill her as the queen had demanded of them. Instead, they carried her far off into the mountains. Snow White was lost and left to wander alone, so she was very sad. Then one day she heard some piping voices singing a merry song, and when she looked over a rock, she saw seven little dwarfs. They all lived in the mountains where they dug for gold. Snow White saw the chunks of gold they were finding. She had never seen gold before, and she wondered what it was for. The seven dwarfs made her very welcome. "We sell it to a prince who rides here once every year from a far-off land." Snow White went to the little wooden hut where the seven dwarfs lived. They made her very welcome and gave her a room of her own. In return, she made curtains and cushions and made sure that there were fresh flowers in the house every day. She grew to love the little dwarfs, who were so happy to have her as a guest. "You've made this home of ours much nicer," they told Snow White. "Please stay forever and ever." One day, when the dwarfs had gone off to dig gold, Snow White decided to clean and polish all the gold they had collected for the prince. It was all in a room in the house, almost up to the roof. The dwarfs had told her they expected the prince to arrive any day soon. Snow White worked in the gold room for a while, and then she began to feel dizzy, so she went outside for a breath of fresh air. Sitting on a tree stump, she slowly turned into a statue of gold. There she was when the dwarfs returned, a solid gold statue of the girl they all loved. They didn't know how or why it had happened, but there was nothing they could do about it. At first they were all very sad, but then they thought, "Oh well, at least now she will stay with us forever." But it wasn't so, because on the very next day the prince arrived from his far-off land. He was dressed all in black armor, seated on a magnificent black horse. The prince bought all the dwarfs' gold, and because he begged them to let him have the golden statue as well, they agreed. So Snow White was carried off to a far-off land by a black prince, just as it had been prophesied. But when Snow White arrived in the prince's palace, the spell was broken, and she became human again. The prince had loved the golden statue. Now he had the real, living Snow White to love, and he was overjoyed. A royal messenger was sent to Snow White's father. He returned with the news that his wicked wife had left him, never to return. And there was even better news. The king was coming to find his beloved daughter, Snow White. In a few days, he arrived with seven knights in shining armor. Gladly, he gave his consent for the prince to marry Snow White. And so she did. The seven knights were her guard of honor, and the seven little dwarfs came to be her pages.
Turn the page. Listen to the sound again. Remember to turn the page when you hear. Millions of Cats by Wanda Gog. Millions of Cats. Once upon a time, there was a very old man and a very old woman. They lived in a nice clean house, which had flowers all around it, except where the door was. But they couldn't be happy because they were so very lonely.
If we only had a cat,
sighed the very old woman.
A cat?
Asked the very old man.
Yes, a sweet little fluffy cat,
said the very old woman.
I will get you a cat, my dear,
said the very old man. And he set out over the hills to look for one. He climbed over the sunny hills. He trudged through the cool valleys. He walked a long, long time. And at last, he came to a hill which was quite covered with cats. Cats here, cats there, cats and kittens everywhere. Hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats.
Oh,
cried the old man joyfully.
Now I can choose the prettiest cat and take it home with me.
So he chose one. It was white. But just as he was about to leave, he saw another one, all black and white. And it seemed just as pretty as the first. So he took this one also. But then he saw a fuzzy gray kitten way over here, which was every bit as pretty as the others. So he took it too. And now he saw one way down in a corner, which he thought too lovely to leave. So he took this too. And just then, over here, the very old man found a kitten which was black and very beautiful.
It would be a shame to leave that one,
said the very old man. So he took it. And now, over there, he saw a cat which had brown and yellow stripes, like a baby tiger.
I simply must take it,
cried the very old man. And he did. So it happened that every time the very old man looked up, he saw another cat which was so pretty he could not bear to leave it. And before he knew it, he had chosen them all. And so he went back over the sunny hills and down through the cool valleys to show all his pretty kittens to the very old woman. It was very funny to see those hundreds and thousands.
such a great noise that the very old man and the very old woman ran into the house as fast as they could. They did not like such quarreling. But after a while, the noise stopped, and the very old man and the very old woman peeped out of the window to see what had happened. They could not see a single cat.
"I think they must have eaten each other all up,"
said the very old woman.
"It's too bad."
"But look,"
said the very old man, and he pointed to a bunch of high grass. In it sat one little frightened kitten. They went out and picked it up. It was thin and scraggly.
"Poor little kitty,"
said the very old woman.
"Dear little kitty,"
said the very old man.
"How does it happen that you were not eaten up with all those hundreds and thousands and millions and billions and trillions of cats?"
"Oh, I'm just a very homely little cat,"
said the kitten.
"So when you asked who was the prettiest, I didn't say anything. So nobody bothered about me."
They took the kitten into the house, where the very old woman gave it a warm bath and brushed its fur until it was soft and shiny. Every day they gave it plenty of milk, and soon it grew nice and plump.
"And it is a very pretty cat after all,"
said the very old woman.
"It is the most beautiful cat in the whole world,"
said the very old man.
"I ought to know, for I've seen hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats, and not one was as pretty as this one."
End of tape 4, side B.